Hi, and welcome to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. Today, I'll be interviewing Professor William McMurrin and his student Heather Johnson. A fun little fact about Heather is that after we recorded this episode, she was named Student of the Year at Dixie Tech, where she was studying. Thank you both so much for being here, Professor McMurrin and Heather. They are working in the drafting program?
It's architectural drafting, yes.
Drafting. Okay, great. So thank you both for meeting with me and letting me interview you today. And I think we'll go ahead and start with Heather. Heather, I understand you're working on an attainable housing project with your class. What can you tell us about yourself, your subject of study, and your interest and involvement in the housing situation in Utah?
Okay. No, I became interested in the program at Dixie Tech because architecture has been something that I have long enjoyed, you know, my entire life, and something that I wanted to get involved in. And so when I found out about the program and the opportunity to, you know, learn about the construction documents, AutoCAD, Revit, and having the opportunity to work in that particular field, I became really excited about it. So that's kind of how I got started here. And obviously, through the course of our study, we focus on different things, and I'd come across a series of articles on KSL, first talking about the homeless situation that we know is of great concern up there, and some of the suggestions or possibilities that they were looking into in order to help alleviate that problem. And I'd read that, you know, like down in Austin, Texas, they'd have been experimenting with like tiny home villages and things like that. And Salt Lake was looking into programs around the country that had been successful and what they could do up there. So they talked about, you know, kind of a large project on the west side. And I'm not entirely sure if all of these articles were actually related. I just happened to read them kind of in a series over a couple of weeks. Then I came across this article about an AIA competition that Salt Lake was announcing. And it's an international competition, but obviously focused in the area up there. And
what does AIA stand for?
Maybe Bill can answer that better.
American Institute of Architects.
Okay.
And yeah. It's a joint competition with Salt Lake City and the Utah chapter of the American Institute of Architects. And it's open to anybody, architects, engineers, home builders, students, and all of the submissions are anonymous, so they don't know who's submitting what as they try and make their awards or determinations of whatever. We're not really sure what kind of recognition will come from it.
So it's blind judged, and is it primarily the state of Utah that they focus
yes,
on?
Yes, yes. Okay. It was, well, I don't know whether it was just open to anybody anywhere. Maybe, I think it was.
Yeah, it did say that it was open to all international applicants. But, you know, most likely it would probably be focused in the Utah area.
In our region.
Yeah. But like you said, it's a blind competition. So you have no idea who's entered and who you're competing against or anything. And obviously I fall into the student category. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you never know where ideas can come from. So...
great. So can you tell us a little bit about your project?
Yeah. So as the competition was divided into two categories, and you could either focus on like a tiny home, which was under 400 square feet, or an ADU, which stands for accessory dwelling unit, and that would need to be under 650 square feet. And ADU is kind of what we think of that typical mother-in-law suite or casita or something that exists on a property with another a primary residence. But I decided to, you know, focus on the tiny home side of things. And as I was talking about it with Bill and, you know, going over ideas, we'd had a presenter come and talk to us about net zero and energy and efficiency and different construction methods and stuff. However, his main focus had been on, you know, definitely more custom and high-end homes. And, you know, I felt like that's great technology and great engineering, but like, how do we get that to everyone? Another thing that we were talking about is I wasn't convinced that isolating or relegating affordable housing to just one section of a community was the best way to do it. For example, let's say we're talking about the Salt Lake Valley, to designate just one certain area of the city, and this would be a big tiny home village, or this would be where the affordable housing is, or something like that. Not that that, you know, hasn't been done, and that sometimes that's successful, and that it kind of helps with zoning or whatever. But I felt like it would be more effective and of more benefit to the community to actually sprinkle these homes, these affordable, more attainable homes, throughout the entire community. We can go into some of the details of that, but like one of the things that's kind of hit me, because I do have school-age children, is what that means for different school districts. And, you know, the Salt Lake Valley is not one single school district. It's multiple school districts. And so if you have focused in one area, attainable housing and some of the things that go along with that, I can see how that could be a greater burden on a school district where they have kids that are in need of lots of resources, or, you know, don't have access to as many resources as others. However, if this is sprinkled throughout a community, then I feel like if they're in a regular neighborhood, then when the school district needs something, then they can, you know, you go to the community and you kind of get that extra support. And so the resources can be more spread out. And I also think that there, you know, I'm sure we've read books or heard talks or whatever that, like, we're the sum of the five people that surround us or whatever. And I just think that, like, when you're in an area and everybody around you is successful or has had success doing certain types of things, then we learn from those types of things and those types of patterns, and it helps to build everybody up. And so that's one of the, you know, a couple of the reasons that I felt like it might be more important to spread this out through the community. And we care about the people that live next to us. And those are the ones that we want to take care of. And if somebody needs help and they're in an isolated community, we don't know them. We don't have that natural tendency to step in and help out.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. That sounds like you have a great why for this project. So tell us some of the details about what it is you designed. Did you do it as a group project, or is this something you've all done yourself?
Well, we kind of started out like bouncing ideas off some of the other students, but really in the end, it just ended up being me and with Bill advising me on the project. To start off with, you know, I focused on the fact that we're talking about a tiny home that needed to be under 400 square feet. In their codes that they listed in there, that 400 square feet did not include a loft area if it was open to below and did not have, you know, regular height ceilings in that loft. So I focused on making that main level 400 square feet. And my thought was to design a tiny home that, like, I would want to live in and to make it as flexible as possible. So, for example, this home does consist of a separate bedroom on that main level. And then it kind of has an open kitchen dining area, which I think we all like how that works, but it especially works in a tiny home. And then you have a bathroom, and it includes a stackable washer and dryer inside that bathroom. And then there's a focus on, you know, storage and flexibility and so forth. And then it includes that loft up above. And you access that loft through a ship's ladder. So while this home can be made, I mean, what they would consider it is ADA adaptable. So it can be made to accommodate various needs, but some things like a ship's ladder wouldn't accommodate everything or everybody. The other thing that I included in that was a covered patio, because I feel like when you are in a tiny space like that, being able to extend into that outdoor area, you know, would make a big difference. And the competition didn't specifically address parking or, you know, what would be done with that, but unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, in the West, we rarely live in a walkable community. While we may live somewhere that does have access to some things, that's not really how our communities are set up. And so I felt like it was important to include some kind of, you know, like a carport or something like that, because people will have a car, they will have a vehicle, and they need it for a job or, you know, to get where they need to get. And so I included the carport on there. The other thing that I did in the design is I have I have six different elevations, but it's the same floor plan. And the reason that I did that is to make it more affordable to construct and to make it more, to make it be able to fit into a neighborhood more easily. So by using the same floor plan, but changing up the roof line or where the carport was located, obviously people can't see this, but you can see how it changes the outside of the house significantly and makes it look like a completely different home, even though it's the exact same floor plan.
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify for people mm-hmm. who may not be familiar with architectural terms, is the elevation is how the outside of the home looks.
Yeah.
Right?
Like what the roof line does, just what the outside of the house looks like.
Maybe the textures and materials mm-hmm. might change.
Materials, okay. Roof lines, where you place the windows, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
So the basic floor plan's the same, mm-hmm. but just the outside mm-hmm. looks different. And that, so that's a benefit to efficiency in construction.
Cool. Because my main idea was that these homes could be put into any neighborhood. So for example, we have a lot of subdivisions out there where there's a couple of empty lots and they've been sitting there for a few years or something. Well, what if the city made it possible for, through changing ordinances or zoning or something, but anyway, facilitated the process so that somebody could come in and maybe take, like the example that I have here is you have two regular size, about 10,000 square foot lots, which is on the small side, but pretty typical in Utah. And you can fit six tiny homes on there in a cute little cluster that fits into the neighborhood. Or on a single lot, you can fit three of these tiny homes. And then I also took a section where you had four lots and you put a little through street in there. And now you have 12 tiny homes there. And I just thought that, this is just to illustrate the flexibility depending on the subdivision and what's available. And so this isn't just for an existing subdivision, one that's not completely built out. This would be, in my opinion, encouraged for any new developments. For, as developers are going, gaining a piece of land and trying to put something together, sort of spreading this attainable housing throughout these developments and doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I think that's such a good idea because I see a lot of times if an existing neighborhood, there might be a little bit of opposition to mm-hmm. including something more dense when their expectation was originally that it wasn't there. But for new development, I could see it being such a great help. And because then people could have that expectation up front. Oh, this is a neighborhood with a wide variety. Maybe somebody else in my family could buy here that we couldn't normally live close together, except that this is brings that opportunity.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, I love that.
And also because that's one of the reasons that I added the covered porch and the carport, because as you can see from the elevations, it lends itself to a more traditional style home versus the tiny homes that we may be familiar with kind of look like a trailer or something because they're designed to be mobile or, that's just how they're structured. But this layout with the L-shaped floor plan, the covered patio, and the carport gives each of these tiny homes sort of a mini traditional home appearance. So when you see them placed in a neighborhood, as I've illustrated that through the Lumion program, they don't look so out of place. They look like part of the neighborhood, just on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And I just think personally, if something like this were to come into my subdivision, that would be exciting. It would be welcoming and it would be an opportunity. And you hope that like through education and through some of these kind of things, like you could help people get on board with like what this means and what it could mean for a community and that it is good for everyone in the community, not just the fact that people that need these attainable homes, this is good for all of us. And we're all going to have, I just think of my children now, I have one son that just barely got married. And my main concern is that they will never be able to afford a house in the existing market.
Yeah, that's a huge concern for me too. And one of the reasons that I've gotten so interested in attainable mm-hmm. housing, because I think our market in our area, at least, has risen so quickly that it will be harder for younger people and people who work here to be able to
Yeah, and we're not talking about people that, you know, don't have good jobs or, you mm-hmm. know, don't have a professional job or something. Like, you know, my husband's a school teacher, and I know that if we were to try to get into the market right now, it would never happen. But fortunately, we purchased long ago, over 20 years ago, and, you know, have been able to buy and sell. And if this was even just an entry for somebody to be able to start that process, you know, I think that that would mean a lot for it. Because I'm not saying that, you know, having these bigger houses or these nicer homes, like, we shouldn't be doing that. But we just need a pathway to get from the starting point to, you know, where we want to be in the end.
Communities all over certainly all over Utah, as well as I think in a lot of places, are experiencing this issue of affordable housing. And so in order to, and they're all thinking of solutions of how they can deal with the problem. With a proposal like this, two things could easily happen. The community, the city or town could make it a requirement that within any new development, you had to provide a certain percentage of affordable housing. They do that now, and as an example, with a community park. You might have one or two spaces that could have been houses, but now that community requires that to be a park for the local development. That takes place currently in St. George, for instance. So for the other aspect to that is, and Heather in this proposal has addressed some of these issues, the fact that you can put three or four houses on what was one lot, the developer is almost going to end up with the same amount of profit. And it's, I think it's, plus the fact that the city could add some incentives for a developer if they were doing these tiny homes within a development.
Yeah, it's my understanding that the land is usually the highest cost in the cost, if you break down the cost of building. So I can see.
Right, and the purpose really isn't to penalize a developer, you know, for deciding to, you know, more responsibly build some affordable or attainable housing. The purpose is to provide a pathway for both this affordability and profitability. So it will still be profitable for the developer to do something like this. And I understand and support making money through our jobs. Like, that's what we're supposed to do. And so instead of trying to penalize that or saying that you know, well, if you do this, you won't make as much as you would. You know, here's a example of how that could happen, and both needs could be satisfied.
Yeah, I love that. I had a question earlier. You mentioned net zero. Is that, can you tell me more about that? Because I'm less familiar with that term. Is it a building goal?
It is, or and it's something that I'm, you know, have heard of, but I'm just learning more about. And so Bill can jump in anytime to kind of help me out on this. But net zero basically refers to, first of all, the construction of the home that enables it to use as little of energy as possible. So the construction of the home becomes as energy efficient as possible. Then the second part of that is then through solar panels or geothermal or something else, producing the little amount left that the home does require. So I think that there's many ways to do that, but one of the things that I've done here is the double wall construction with the engineered framing. First of all, the engineered framing is kind of a module that is on the 24-inch on center plan. So your joists are lined up, your trusses are lined up, your studs are lined up, your windows are placed in that 24-inch, you know, increments. And that just produces less waste from your building materials. The second part of that is the double wall construction, which that exterior wall becomes the shell of the building. And then you're creating this thermal break that prevents the, you know, hot and cool from moving from the outside to the inside and vice versa. And so in this particular example, that's accomplished through that exterior wall and then foam insulation. Then you have that secondary wall, and all of your electrical and plumbing components are placed between the two walls, so there's no holes in that insulation or in that thermal barrier. And then you have that interior wall. And so because those two walls are separate, that prevents the transfer of heat and cold from the inside to the outside and vice versa.
Well, that sounds like exactly what we need in July in southern Utah.
Yeah, it's good for heat and cold.
Uh-huh. You know, another aspect that works nicely with this proposal, the floor plan, as Heather's pointed out, is the same. That doesn't change from one location to the other. Orientation would change, and you always have constraints where the roads are, where maybe even views are, etc. So for solar panels, and that's also part of this project on the roof, to have solar panels, they have to be oriented in the right direction for them to be efficient. But given this several options for different roof designs, makes it even that much more, it facilitates that issue to where you can almost always provide a roof design with a specific floor plan in that location, and that roof design could have the orientation that's needed for solar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I know I see a lot of my neighbors wanting to get solar, but there's a tree or their roof is just not situated. So I love that planning from the very get-go to be able to achieve that.
Yeah, and so there's no need to change the floor plan. You simply choose the roof line that fits the orientation that is needed. The other thing, like in the design, I purposely made two of the sides without windows because, you know, these homes would naturally or more likely be built in closer proximity. And I wanted to facilitate the privacy without sacrificing the design and the, because another thing that I feel is important in attainable housing is sort of this pride of ownership and wanting to be there, feeling, you know, grateful that you're there or that you have this place or that, you know, it's, we all kind of want our own place, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, do you have any other things? Did you find anything interesting in your research while you were preparing for this project that you would like to share or talk about?
Well, I mean, one thing that occurred to me is, I mean, I know that this is a competition, and I am sure that there will be no shortage of ideas, you know, for innovative ways to do a tiny home, different technologies that are available, because there is so much out there, different building methods and designs. And so while I feel that my house would be very livable, I personally think I could live there as a family of four because it has the loft and, you know, so it could actually function for a single person or a family of four. But I feel like the biggest, I hope, contribution to the competition that my project would bring is the concept of incorporating this into existing and into regular neighborhoods and spreading this out through our community instead of creating this division between upper and lower or, you know, bigger and smaller. I just think that, you know, everybody wants to live in a nice neighborhood. Everybody wants to live in a nice area. And I feel like we can make that happen and spread that out. So I don't think that this is the most innovative tiny home design out there or, you know, anything new like that. But maybe the concept of where we build them and how we build them might be the bigger idea.
Yes, thank you. And Bill, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think that's well said. I agree that that part of this submittal is the powerful part. There's nothing in the parameters of the competition that even suggested something like this in terms of, you know, clustering tiny homes within developments. So, you know, it might be that that part of this submittal is really what causes it to stand out.
Great. Well, I think that's all my questions. So unless you guys have anything else you'd like to share, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy days to share with us and talk about these important issues.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.